The following program is a production of KHNS. Its content does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the Board of Directors and staff of Lincoln L Broadcasting Incorporated, the licensee.
And welcome to Talk Around Town. I'm Deborah Schnabel, your guide through today's talk about things that matter. Stay tuned for today's rundown. We'll start the biweekly news review with Margaret Friedenauer, the KHNS News Director. And our talking topic today is resolutions, how to make ones that work. Our guest is Dr. Marnie Hartman. We'll check in with community education and, hey, who are you? Introduces us to another community member. Let's go. And a good day to you, Margaret.
Good morning, Deborah.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you? Happy New Year.
Well, I'm still trying to keep my balance from walking on the ice. It is pretty treacherous outside. Unbelievably so. Even though there's gravel on the ice, it appears to be somewhere underneath the water and other ice and all that. So
yeah,
please,
lots of layers.
Please be careful. Yeah, please be careful.
So
Margaret, what has been happening? It's been a 2-week vacation time for most of us, and having the holidays in the middle of the week is so disorienting.
It throws
Don't you find
me.
That?
Yeah, it really. I didn't know whether yesterday was a Friday or a Sunday or a Monday.
It's very confusing, right? So
right.
I like it when the holidays are on the Friday or a Monday.
Right.
It makes life a whole lot easier to keep in track. But you are the news director of KHNS, and you have been keeping track of things for us. Has anything happened in between those holidays?
Well, I should mention, I was actually in the studio last night working on a different story that we can talk about in a minute. But while I was here, I answered my phone, and it was Marvin out in Cluckwan wondering how much snowfall we had for December, because it was a lot. It was almost 8 feet of snowfall in downtown Haines.
Oh, my goodness.
So there seemed to be a little bit less up at the border, and Marvin said that that's normal.
Typical.
Yeah. But we did have 95.7 inches, just under 8 feet of snowfall in December, just in case people are wondering. So, and it was a little less the month before. So I thought I'd make that mention in case people were curious.
And also, just briefly, the reason that there is more snowfall in town than there is north of us, which is almost counterintuitive because people think of more snow. But I think the snow generally comes out of the south, I guess. Is that why around the mayor,
I guess there's
the
that.
Water.
It was funny. Annie was, because I called Paul Swift, because he's a local weather guy, and he and Annie were explaining this weather pattern and the moisture and everything that comes in and just converges because of where we are. And it's fascinating stuff.
Near the ocean, we get more precipitation,
right,
I guess, than we do north. And like Marvin says, it's always been that way.
Always
since
been
time
that
immemorial.
Right. But so we're nowhere near the 30 feet yet, but we're almost a third of the way there. Well, not quite a third.
All right. And it is the end of December. Okay, so we have January, February, and March.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyways.
All right.
But
so the snow kept falling.
So the reason I was in last night working on a story was because I think several people saw on the front page of the Anchorage paper yesterday, a local company, Southeast Alaska Backcountry Adventures, Heliski Company. Documents were filed in federal court this week, charging them with operating on land without a permit, federal land without a permit.
Wow. Okay.
So that's kind
charges
of...
charges brought by?
The U.S. attorney. So, but along with the charges that were filed, they also filed a plea deal. So Southeast Alaska Backcountry, SEBA, and the U.S. and the feds have already kind of come to a plea agreement on what to do about these violations. What happened is, if you kind of remember back in March. I'm going to tell you.
Yes. You're the news director.
In March, when there was a fatal accident because of the cornice collapse, and because the borough requires GPS coordinates when there's an accident or fatality, when those GPS coordinates were brought to the borough, it was discovered that they were on this ski run that is actually on BLM land, which is fine because it's within the boundaries, except BLM hasn't issued a permit on that land.
Excuse me, when you say it was in the boundaries of...
For Haynesboro's heli-skiing operations.
Okay.
So it was in that boundary, but it was also on BLM land, right?
I see.
Okay. So BLM requires you to have a special use permit if you're going to be doing commercial activities, which is fine. Mm-hmm. They issued those permits to heli-ski companies near Haynes between 2002 and 2006. In 2006, they stopped issuing the permit. They closed that land mm-hmm. to use because they wanted to do the Ring of Fire and other
yes.
studies, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that land has actually been closed. They haven't opened up that land again to for those uses, including heli-skiing. And so when it was discovered that this run, this ski run, took place on that land where they weren't issuing permits and where the company didn't have a permit – then the Department of Justice got involved because it was federal lands. And they discovered through the investigation, it sounds like SEBA cooperated with the investigation, that they have been using that ski run at least 54 times in the last 2 years. So Department of Justice issued a fine, and SEBA agreed to a fine, and they agreed to some restitution. It's about $20,000 in fines and restitution, 2 years probation, where they're all going to have to submit the GPS coordinates to BLM as well. And this – it looks like the plea deal is all agreed upon. It just has to be signed off on a judge next month or this month. We're in January.
We're in January.
Right. So that – I don't know if that brings any closure to it or what really, but that's kind of where it stands.
Mm-hmm.
So because heli-skiing is always an issue.
Yes.
So anyway, so that was something that just happened this week. Mm-hmm. And I guess we should mention that the interim borough manager – is moving along the process to hire a new police chief for Haynes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So she's narrowed it down to two candidates, and one of those candidates is going to be here Saturday and have a little public reception at the library on Saturday from 3 to 4.
And we should also comment that the interim police chief, Simon Ford, has actually withdrawn.
Yes.
Yes.
He
okay.
did. Yes. So. And he mentioned it was because he felt like the candidates that the interim manager had pulled forward and was...
he had a chance, an opportunity to review them himself and make a decision?
Yeah. Well, I think we... I mean, you can go and look at the, mm-hmm. you know, resumes. Mm-hmm. He felt like they had some great training, I guess, that mm-hmm. he would be interested in working under them as mm-hmm. a sergeant. So.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, so the first candidate is coming this week. I don't know if he's here yet. He's from Wyoming he's from Idaho. And then the next candidate from Wyoming will be here maybe in the next week or two. She said she plans on bringing a recommendation for hire up, or at least for confirmation at the January
14th
meeting
of the assembly, right?
Yeah, so.
And we should comment on talking about meetings, mm-hmm. January 7th. Is the next Tuesday
yeah.
is a joint meeting of the Borough Assembly and the school board.
Right.
That's an annual meeting and required by code.
Mm-hmm.
And so invite the public to come and participate in the meeting if there's anything that you'd like to see coordinated.
Awesome.
I guess between the Borough Assembly and the school board, now
yeah.
would be a time to get that audience, I
that
guess.
Audience.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, come and
it's
speak
always,
to them.
It's an interesting meeting because mm-hmm. they do talk about some...
Well, one of the more interesting things, too, is like how to seat everybody.
Yeah.
I attended one of those meetings last year, and it was odd,
mm-hmm.
you know, just to make a great big table and everybody sit around the table. But anyway, I think it would be wonderful to have community members, you know, come forward and speak to the all elected officials
right.
in the Haynesboro at one meeting at one time. It would be a fantastic opportunity.
More meeting participation. That should be your resolution for
you know,
year.
It's interesting that just today when I was reviewing some past scripts for this program, almost a year and some months ago, we did a recap of the community survey that had been done by McDowell Group. The actual survey, I think, had been created by Scheinberg. But the thing that I was glancing through, and it was 69% of Haines community members surveyed said that they had never attended a public meeting.
Never.
69%.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's almost 70% of the public who could attend meetings does not, has never attended one. I think that's quite significant.
Yeah, you got to try one.
Right. But I do want to also, you know, in that regard, you know, thank the media. And that also includes thanking, oh boy, I'm having a senior moment here. He records all of the meetings.
Bill Kurz.
Yeah,
sure.
Thanks to Bill Kurz for, you know, recording as best he can through all the heads, I guess,
yeah,
in the audience of the borough assembly meetings and putting that. And to Patty Campbell and the TV channel for putting that
for putting it on the air.
Not on the air, but on the channel and
right,
on the cable. So, yeah, it's interesting. Participation is an important part of democracy. I guess some would say that it's the essence of democracy.
You'd think. And today
we're going to talk about resolutions, and perhaps somebody might resolve, you know, to go to more assembly meetings without being elected.
Yeah. It's better than Tuesday night TV, I'll tell you that.
Oh, okay. So. All right. With that, then, thank you very much.
Thanks.
A lot of news. Thank you.
Thanks.
Be mindful of others. PM Fornes, author of Choosing Civility and co-founder of the John Hopkins Civility Project, has granted us permission to present selections from his book published by St. Martin's Press, New York. We have gone through 9 of the rules of civility, and I'm sure that all of you, if given a chance to be tested on them, would remember them. But I like to remind you each week. The first one, pay attention. Acknowledge others. Think the best of others. 4 is listen. Be inclusive. Speak kindly. Don't speak ill. Rule number 8 is accept and give praise. Number 9 is respect even a subtle no. And today's rule number 10, respect others' opinions. Recognizing others' opinions is simply respecting the other person's entitlement to see the world differently than you do. So how do we recognize other people's opinions? Well, of course, you can agree with them as qualified acceptance. Or if you disagree, you can recognize that the other person's statement is not unreasonable. Allow that your opinion might change with more information. And also use of the metaphor of perspective, which is like saying yes, but if you look at it this way. In other words, kind of starting an argument. But these are forms of qualified disagreement. Now, assuming that your opinion is shared by everyone is presumptive and, according to Mr. Fornes, is insensitive and it can be a form of bullying. I thought that was quite interesting. Always consider that those with different views might refrain from voicing them just to preserve harmony or to avoid challenging you because you're an intimidating person. They may be frustrated by your presumption. So make room for disagreement. Invite feedback. Think, what do you think? And say, what do you think? Respect other people's opinions. And today we're checking in with community education. And we have John Hagen, the community education director here with us. Hi, John.
Hi, Deborah.
How are you doing?
Very well. How are
good.
You?
Good. You know, I'm still so old-fashioned. I think that all school happens in semesters. And so that's why when I wanted to check in with a community ed program, I thought, oh, they must be starting a whole bunch of new programs because it's the new semester. How do you approach that?
Well, one way I approach it is this that we do take a little bit of a break over Christmas break, and it's a good time to start anew and start fresh. And with all the holidays behind us, there's a lot more room for activities and We're definitely in the middle of winter where I want to keep people as active as possible.
Is that one of your goals, to keep people active? Physically, mentally, what?
Both physically and mentally.
Okay, so what offerings have you got this semester?
Well, one thing I'm trying to get going is my open gym gets pushed around a little bit.
Why?
Who's
pushing
that
around?
I don't know if you heard, basketball is kind of big in this town.
Oh.
The gyms are probably the most highest used
floor space on the planet.
So on the planet in Haines, in Planet Haines. Some of my open gym activities get pushed after basketball practices. But I know that 8:30 can be a little late for people. So I've started opening up the weight rooms at 7:30.
Mm-hmm.
So to be able to provide a way for people to be active. And I've had things start getting a little pushed later, I had a lot of people using that last year.
Oh, okay. Well, so now that's, you access the weight room through the back door of the gym, or how do you come into the weight room?
Actually, you would go through the gym's entrance of the school.
Okay. Just like normal.
My open gym supervisor should be there, and if you haven't used the weight room in the school, if you go into the front doors of the school, it's going to be your banker.
It's under the pool. Okay.
And there's some shower rooms and locker rooms there off to the right too.
Mm-hmm.
So if you, and if you're not sure, if you're curious about the thing, you can ask my open gym supervisor, Josh Benassi.
Oh, okay.
He'll be able to.
I didn't know Josh was the open gym supervisor.
Yeah.
Okay. And so that weight room is open, and then when basketball is not on, you have open gym for volleyball?
I bounce around between volleyball and basketball, and sometimes if on some weeks volleyball might not be as active, I try and alternate some other activities in there. Sometimes I might split the gym, basketball and volleyball, to accommodate a couple of volleyball. And then later in the springtime, I start doing soccer.
Oh, okay.
Indoor soccer in the small gym.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, one of the fun things is once the Heliski guides start showing up, a lot of those guys are really into soccer. So,
well, they're probably a lot into physical fitness. Got to keep fit somehow. Right. Okay. So that's for the body. And so what kinds of things have we got going for the mind?
Well, one thing I have is I have a couple of carving classes going on. Mm-hmm. And one of them I'll start right away on, I believe it'll be on January 8th. It's carving with Jim Heaton. And one thing I've tried this year, I tried in December and it worked really well. So I'll continue doing it, is instead of holding the class for a 6-week period, I'm giving people the option of just showing up for classes periodically.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I found.
What does that do for Jim? He just has to be there all the time.
he's actually the one that came to me with this idea.
Oh, okay.
Because we started running into a lot of people that weren't able to make the full 6-week commitment to a class, but they were able to maybe make 4 out of the 6 classes. Excuse me. So we're able to.
It's more like drop in then. Is that what you're saying? Okay. Okay. So that must mean then that the attention from the instructor is much more personalized. It's not like you go to a carving class and everybody's expected to be, you know, working with the same knife on the same project, but you're doing whatever it is that you're doing.
Yeah, there's definitely, you get to choose your own project, and there's a lot of people that work on their own pace.
Okay.
There's actually a couple of folks that were there that might be working on a project from the last class, so they just roll through with that.
Okay. Okay. Any other offerings then? I think you mentioned photography.
In addition, a pretty popular class in this town is basic digital photography with Ron Horn, and I'll be doing that. But I have a little bit of a background in photography, and one thing I was going to offer and I was going to be teaching was a sports photography class.
Cool. Now you're saying was. Are you or aren't you?
I probably have more of an emphasis on the natural world than photojournalism, but my background is in photojournalism.
Okay.
So it's it I figured I wanted to, that's something I know about, so it might be something fun, fairly easy fit for me to teach a class.
Okay, so are you going to do it? Is it some sketch?
Yes.
Okay, you will be. So
yeah.
If people are interested. Now, does that mean you have to go to all the basketball games and take pictures of basketball players?
No, not
no?
at all.
Okay, what does it mean?
I'll time the class to be shortly before maybe some of the youth basketball games start getting going. So there might be something in there. But the things I'll be teaching will be applicable to any sport. That.
Okay, so it's like things like how fast your aperture opens up and stuff like that.
Exactly. How to use your camera to capture action, as well as how to plan where your body should be in the court in relation to the activity.
Oh, okay. Wow. Very holistic.
Yes.
Okay. And one of the things that I wanted to ask you is how has the availability of the internet education kind of impacted the offerings that you have at Community Ed? Has it impacted that at all?
No, I'd say it has. Most people historically, community education had a history of facilitating higher learning for people,
right? Like a history of the world, stuff
history
like that.
Of the world, or getting people to doing distance learning or facilitating distance learning for people to take online classes or not online to take correspondence classes through colleges. Mm-hmm. But with the advent of internet classes and online learning, you can actually get a master's degree in just about anything, or a college degree, or just take classes.
So most of the community ed classes then now are more kind of hands-on things and things that you learn better when you have a mentor.
Exactly.
Yeah, good.
But one thing I'll be having this spring is actually a class and seminar on how to get into distance learning, online learning.
Uh-huh.
Because I know there's some people in the community that might want to access some of those resources, but they might not know how to.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I've taken some distance learning classes, and some of them are really tough, and some of them are really easy, and some are really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, thank you very much for, but what is the phone number? I just want to make sure people know how to get in touch with you if they need to or want to know what's going on.
Oh, well, you can, I'm really easy to find by email. Oh. That's communityed@hbsd.net.
Okay.
Or my phone number is at 766-6727.
6727. Aha, school number. All right. Thank you very much, John.
Okay. I'm off to go shovel some more snow.
Okay. And you might want to turn. We're a day into the new year, and you know, I wonder how many new year resolutions have already been broken, forgotten, ignored, or modified. I don't know. Decision making is a skill, and today we are blessed to have Dr. Marnie Hartman as our guest. Welcome, Marnie.
Thank you, Deborah.
Yeah. Marnie's helped many of us make better decisions and stick to resolutions that impact our health. Today we're going to expand on that art of resolution making, goal setting, decision making, call it what you will. It's about conscious change, I think, and it helps us to make decisions that impact other aspects of our life. We're going to deal with that a little bit today. So, you know, Marnie, I started developing this topic by thinking about New Year's resolutions. And like I said, it's already day two, and there's probably some people that are already beating themselves up, you know. What is it that makes these things so difficult? Do we expect too much of ourselves?
I think that could be part of it. I also think sometimes we just allow somebody else to set expectations for ourselves without really deciding why it's important to us. It's a big thing what I tend to talk about when we think of resolutions or setting goals for mm-hmm. yourself mm-hmm. is that it has to be meaningful to you. Mm-hmm. It can't be because you think it's what society is asking of you, or, you know, if it's like weight loss, it's because your doctor has talked to you about it the last 10 times you've been in, that that's something that you should do. If it's not meaningful for you, you can wake up January 1st and say, I'm going to lose weight this year. Mm-hmm. But if there's not a good purpose for it, it's probably not going to happen. You're probably not going to change your behavior, which is what resolutions come down to. It's making the decision and then formulating a plan to actually change your behavior. And I think it's that plan piece that people tend to kind of forget about.
When I was walking over here today for the show, I was thinking about a conversation that you and I had over the phone about the differences between, you know, resolutions and decision making. And right now you kind of blended it together in a way that makes, you know, sense to me, because I think of them as decisions. But you talked about goal setting, and I was actually thinking, now, have I ever made a decision that was oriented or that was as a result of having set a goal? And I thought, you know, that doesn't seem like a real usual way for me to approach decision making. I usually am just reacting, you know, making decisions about something that's in my very immediate future. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't really have that much to do with something that's out there, I guess. So let's talk about goal setting. And when you talk about it has to be meaningful to you, you know, for some people, and I include myself in this, it's really hard to dig that deep.
Ooh, isn't it?
Yeah,
though?
Yeah. I mean, how do you really dig that deep to find out, you know, what is meaningful to you? Mm-hmm. It's because you're right. It's so easy to latch on to something that is out there that's popular, maybe.
Right, right, right. I think, you know, if you ask Professor Google what the number one resolution is.
Yeah, what is it?
I think it's weight loss.
Okay.
Weight loss, getting more organized, being more considerate of your friends and family, you know, taking more time to spend with your children. Those are typically the top.
Wow. Top okay. Things. Well, I'm glad you did that research. We could talk about each one of those things. Okay. So you work as a professional. You are by profession a physical therapist.
Correct.
And it's interesting to me how you kind of, at least in our community, which is where you're living out your life right now, you know, have emerged as a person who's helped people make decisions that are more generally about health. Mm-hmm. Now, has that been a transformation for you? How did you come to ending up? I'm not saying you're ending up mm-hmm. there, but that's where you're probably more obvious to people.
Mm-hmm.
How did that, what's that all about?
What is that all about? Well, now you're asking me to dig deep into myself, right? Well, but if I think back a little bit, I think it's part of who I've always kind of been. You know, I was a gymnast as a youngster, and through that we were taught strongly to write gymnastics-based goals for ourselves, which have to come from looking at your whole person. And then when I went to school for physical therapy, it was something that I wasn't expecting, but the school that I went to was very big on whole person wellness and health, and making sure that, you know, even though our time, and we talk about not having enough time, our time was very much spent in study. Mm-hmm. They were big on promoting physical fitness and time with your family. It was a religious-based institution, so having time for personal worship, whatever that happened to be for you, whether you were part of their mm-hmm. institution or not. So I think that kind of just helped to continue to I guess, facilitate that in me. And then coming to Haines, you know, I think a beautiful thing about our community is that if there's something that you want to get a little bit involved in, or you see a little hole out there, it's super easy to dive in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that it just started being asked of me more and more, because maybe you'd been in my office and we talked a little bit about the condition that brought you there, whether it was an ankle sprain or whatever. And then it kind of comes into the like, oh, well, maybe my ankle wouldn't hurt so much if I could be more active and put not have so much weight to put on it. And, you know, and so they start to hear that. And then I think people just started to ask more and more of, could I come out and speak more outside of my mm-hmm. my office? And, you know, Pam Sloper has been kind of my partner in crime and just getting
partner in health.
That's right. And getting the community more, mm-hmm. you know, fit mm-hmm. and well. And, you mm-hmm. know, it's a passion that I hold. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I guess I feel like you should share your passions with people.
Uh-huh. So let's talk then about goal setting a little bit, because that interests me. How do you know when, you know, you're tapping into a goal that's meaningful for you?
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess it comes back with kind of rounding back our conversation here. It comes back with first making a decision, right? A lot of people have been faced with this idea of New Year's resolutions. Like you mentioned when we first had our conversation about me coming on the air, that something you've recognized since you were a child mm-hmm. that you were supposed to set resolutions. So, you know, maybe it's coming for first from like, I wake up January 1st, I know this is something that I'm supposed to do. And so I'm just going to throw it out there that this year I am going to run a marathon. So that's a decision, right? Mm-hmm. Some would also say that's a goal, mm-hmm. right? It's mm-hmm. a goal of mine to run run a marathon.
Is there a distinction? Can you make a distinction between those two things?
Personally, I think of a goal as something that's measurable and something that has components of attainability to it. And so, yes, running a marathon is measurable and attainable for some. Right. For others, it might not be attainable this year, if depending on where your fitness level is when you start. But I think of like, just making sure that you can measure
it. But do people have, I think people need help with that sometimes.
I agree.
And so you, like, for example, like maybe therapists and maybe you, you know, it's, and even friends can say, well, gosh, that's not attainable for you mm-hmm. to, let's say, let's use weight as an example, mm-hmm. you know, to somebody say, I'm going to lose 30 pounds by July 1. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you look at that and you think, is that possible for that person to do that? I mean, what would it take mm-hmm. to do that? So how do you help people get realistic about what they can do?
Well, I think you make the decision of, I want to lose weight. You set the goal of a measurable amount. I want to make it 30 pounds. You set a time frame by the end of the summer, right? And then you have to kind of scientifically break that down. How many calories is it going to take for me to lose 30 pounds? How much do I have to decrease or change what I'm putting in versus how much do I have to increase or change what I'm putting out, right? And then hopefully that little mathematical equation will balance out that, you know, that 6 to 7 month amount of time is a reasonable request for you to lose 30 pounds. And then I think you have to have a full plan around it. You have to say, this is how I'm going to change what I'm putting in and change what I'm putting out.
Okay, so let's talk about not beating yourself up if you have to modify the plan in the middle of it, which I'm thinking to myself, wow, you know, I've started, I mean, that all sounds really great to have it mapped out on a piece of paper, but oh my goodness, you know, sometimes things happen and you get interrupted or maybe it's just too much. Mm-hmm. And so,
and that's where I think the plan itself has to be very realistic. You know, if you're asking yourself to, say, output an extra 500 calories a day, which would be equivalent to about an hour of a moderate amount of exercise. Mm-hmm. If that's not possible in your day right now, if you feel like time is something that you are very limited on, then we may need to increase the amount of time that you're giving yourself to reach your goal of 30 pounds. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So mm-hmm, maybe mm-hmm, we need mm-hmm. to look at, you need to increase your output to 250 calories mm-hmm. a day, which might be more like 30 minutes of exercise. Mm-hmm. And that might feel more attainable to you. Mm-hmm. And I do think that that's when you have to dive deep into yourself and recognize what your strengths are, what your barriers are going to be, and how you're going to try to overcome those barriers, whether they're mental barriers against being able to release that emotional connection to a food that is you know,
calling you,
beckoning and adding to this problem, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. you know, and how are you going to overcome that? And how mm-hmm. can you keep yourself accountable? accountable. We just have a visitor by Windsor now trying to keep us accountable for exercise, right? But, you know, and I think setting us incentives programs can help, you know, putting a little carrot out there of entering, you know, a fitness event that helps you to continue with your exercise, mm-hmm. right? So your goal is still weight loss, but you know that if you're going to go for a 30-minute run every day, that 30 minutes might be more meaningful to you if you also have, you know, a little 5K that you're trying to train for, mm-hmm. that you can, so you can achieve tiny goals along the way. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
It does. And one of the things I want to ask you about is some of the programs that you're initiating. Let's just take a minute right now to talk about those, just to introduce them. You have, I think, two mm-hmm. things ongoing right now that have to do with health. Just mm-hmm. tell me what those are.
We have the Well and Fit Community Challenge that we've done for multiple years in a row now, which is an in-person class course through community education. Mm-hmm. They meet at the library from 6 to 7. And really,
John didn't mention that.
It starts on Thursday, the mm-hmm. 9th of January. Oh, okay. It goes for 8 weeks. And really what the purpose of that course is to help people write goals and learn how to formulate a plan around them.
Does it have to be about health?
We ask that you write a goal that has to do with nutrition, physical activity, and behavioral personal growth. Mm-hmm. So health in the broad sense of the word
mental
health.
Mental health, yes. Too, sure. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then the second program is kind of an online virtual one that we have on Facebook, which is called WFCC, Well and Fit Community Council, Real Resolutions. So if you go on to Facebook and put that into the search thing, it comes up as
a group.
Would
you say it again?
WFCC, Real Resolutions.
Okay. The CC Community
Council.
Yeah. Okay. Is that an organization or is it just something?
It's the Well and Fit organization. Okay. That's our actual title, is the Well and Fit Community Council.
Okay. All right. Now, so back to what the importance of working these things with other people. It seems to me that even though like you're on Facebook, you're still a community and you say it's virtual. And then the other program is like in person. Talk to me about how you would value or the distinctions between goal setting and having a group of people working within a group and then working just privately. Are there pros and cons of both?
You know, evidence really does show us that people who tend to get involved in personal change or behavioral change in a group do better because and it comes down to that having accountability. That a lot of us don't have self-discipline enough to do it 100% on our own.
So the idea is that if we are responsible to our peers, that we will do better than if we're just responsible to ourselves.
Yeah.
Isn't that really the crux of it, though, it seems like?
It comes back to being able to find internal excuses.
Right.
Right? It's easier to if you've only made this commitment to yourself to not eat chocolate, right? Uh-huh. It's easier to go home at night when there's nobody else around, nobody knows, and you can eat that chocolate because the only person you're disappointing is you. Mm-hmm. And most of us are used to disappointing ourselves.
Oh.
Doesn't that sound sad?
It does.
But we won't, we have a harder time disappointing others. So if you have to show up to class or post on our little Facebook group that, shoot, I broke my commitment to myself and to others by eating that piece of chocolate, we think about it.
What's expected on the Facebook
the challenge? The Facebook challenge is a little bit more of a guided nutrition physical activity program. So I don't want to say that we're writing the goal for you, but we're writing the plan for you. Mm-hmm. And hoping that you can stay accountable through the mm-hmm. through the online resources. Mm-hmm. But I feel like if goal setting and resolutions and things like that are pretty new, the group in-person class is probably a little bit better because you can make that goal very specific to you, mm-hmm. where the online stuff, for lack of a better word, it's a little more rigid.
And do you, as the guide of the group, help people to see where they might not be realistic in their goals? And do you help counsel, I guess would be the word.
Yes.
People to do that. And is that done within the group with the whole group, or is that done
on the Thursday night setting? Exactly. I mean, we ask you to write your own goals, and then we may point out that that's a great long-term goal, but it's probably not going to be attainable within these 8 weeks. So let's set up, you know, sort of a stepping stone goals to get you to your long-term goal. But, you know, you probably need to rein it in just a little bit.
Okay. I think I already asked that one. And one of the things that really, I want to move a little bit into decision-making, because that is a part of well, like you said, it's the first thing. If you're going to resolve to do something, you decide that you're going to do that and then make your plan. This morning, I want to launch into this. This morning, I heard a story on National Public Radio that had something to do with decision-making and how some of us get caught in bad decision-making when we're under stress or we have a scarcity of resources such as time or money. And something you just said earlier made me think also of just spiritual resource. When you made the comment that we're used to disappointing ourselves more than we're, you know, disappointing other people, it was kind of a difficult thing to hear because I think that, I mean, it's probably true that it's easier to kind of help a community than it is to help yourself sometimes. But let's just, if you don't mind, let's just run this. It runs about 5 minutes and I'd like to comment on it. It does have something to do with the kind of the poverty of decisions, you know? Let's go with that.
Just a note that this is from NPR, so we're just rebroadcasting a story from NPR.
A new book that explores a major source of stress. The book is called Scarcity, and it's... Let's hear now about a new book that explores a major source of stress. The book is called Scarcity, and it's a look at what happens to us when we're pressured with too little time or too little money. The authors say scarcity actually changes how we think. NPR's social science correspondent Shankar Vedantam explains.
Each September, the state of Massachusetts asks one thing from scarcity author and Harvard economist Sendhil Mulayanathan: to renew his car inspection sticker. And each year, this recipient of the MacArthur Genius Award does the same thing. He's really busy, so on each day leading up to the expiration of the sticker, he tells himself he'll attend to it the next day.
One more day of delay, I mean, what's the big deal?
Pretty soon, Mulayanathan finds himself driving around Boston with an expired sticker.
The sticker is 3 months expired. And now you're doing all sorts of stuff, like you're driving down the street. Oh, look, there's a cop. I better make a right turn so he doesn't see my expired sticker.
Turning the wrong way makes Mulayanathan late for a meeting or late for class. Now he has to spend time fixing the mistake, rescheduling meetings with students, playing catch-up. His next day gets even busier. Now he definitely doesn't have time to fix that sticker.
I do this constantly. Right now I've got a meeting to get to. I don't have the time to replace the sticker. Whereas the truth is, the enormous amount of distortions I've now made for the last 3 months because of this stupid sticker add up to five times as much time as I would have spent just going and having it fixed.
Mulayanathan recently decided to think about his behavior like a researcher would. Was he just a busy, absent-minded professor, or was there something else going on? He thought about research in his own field. He studies the economics of poverty. Lots of studies show poor people tend to make bad financial decisions, the kind that land them in ever deeper cycles of debt. Mulayanathan realized there was an unexpected connection between his behavior and the behavior of the people he studied.
Just as the poor mismanage their money, isn't it astonishing how badly I mismanage my time?
Not having enough money and not having enough time might not seem like similar things, but psychologically, they are similar. You're running low on something you desperately need. You feel the pinch of scarcity. Mulayanathan turned to a colleague at Princeton, the psychologist Eldar Shafir. That conversation led to the book Scarcity, which they wrote together. Just as Mulayanathan was asking why he mismanaged his own time, Shafir said he was asking why the poor make bad financial decisions.
Perhaps it's the context of poverty itself, being in that context, that brings about a very special psychology, a psychology that's particular to not having enough. And then that psychology brings out problematic outcomes.
After lots of research, Mulayanathan and Shafir have concluded that when you don't have something you desperately need, the feeling of scarcity works like a trap. In a study looking at poor farmers in India, for example, the researchers found that farmers tended to be better planners and thinkers when they were flush with cash. But right before harvest, when they were strapped for cash, Mulayanathan says their brains focused only on short-term goals.
When you have scarcity and it creates a scarcity mindset, it leads you to take certain behaviors which in the short term are help you manage scarcity, but in the long term only make matters worse.
Poor farmers, for example, tend to weed their fields less often than wealthy farmers. It's the same with being super busy. The busier Mulayanathan got, the harder it became for him to make time to get his car sticker. In fact, there was a short-term reward for not getting the sticker. On each day he didn't get the sticker renewed, he saved a little time to devote to other pressing demands. But each delay made things worse the next day. Scarcity, whether of time or money, tends to focus the mind on immediate challenges. You stretch your budget to make ends meet. People in the grip of scarcity are tightly focused on meeting their urgent needs. But that focus comes at a price. Important things on the periphery get ignored.
That's at the heart of the scarcity trap. You are so focused on the urgent that the important gets waylaid. But because the important gets waylaid, you're experiencing even more scarcity tomorrow.
Mulayanathan and Shafir think we ought to change how we think about poverty and how we think about time. When poor people and busy people run short of money or time, we tend to blame them.
There's this presumption in our entire social policy sphere that mistakes happen because of willful negligence. And I think just understanding that, yes, we need incentives to prevent willful negligence, but we also need a way to recognize that no matter how hard somebody tries, there will be mistakes.
It might be possible to reduce the impact of mistakes caused by scarcity. The poor farmer in India might need repeated reminders about weeding. One might not be enough. The minimum wage worker in America might need a couple of extra days to pay her bills instead of being slapped with a fine one day after payment is due. For busy people, Shafir says a respite from scarcity might mean penciling in a block of time.
So, Marnie, I found that fascinating. And, I was already thinking about resolutions and decision-making and all that. What's your reaction to hearing the story?
It is a fascinating take. And I think it's interesting that they really highlight this word scarcity. Mm-hmm. Because oftentimes the excuses that we tend to make around not following a decision or realizing a goal or whatever you want to call it is because we have not enough
of something.
Fill in the blank. Yeah. Right. Time, money, mm-hmm. Whatever. And so, yeah, I think it's a fascinating take on that we can all put into our lives. Certainly when he goes to the farmers in India, it's easy for us to go, oh, well, that doesn't pertain to me. But it does.
Right. And to think that he's a MacArthur scholar, and a professor, and he suffers from these same impediments, that us normal people do, I mm-hmm. guess, where we actually are making our lives more difficult for ourselves by. And I guess what I got out of this, too, was like short term goals. And when we started talking earlier, I recognized that I'm very short term goal focused. I mean, I think about what is needed today or tomorrow or next week or next month. And then I find myself getting really depressed when I think about, oh, my goodness, I haven't done what I thought 10 years ago I was going to do. And, it just brought that all home to me. Mm-hmm. So his, the scarcity trap, I thought, was a really interesting thing. And
I like this idea of how even in the short, when we talk about the short term, so he doesn't replace that sticker on his car, which allows him just a little bit more time that day. But then as it goes forth, it's actually probably requiring more of his time and energy and mental focus to continue to delay it because right. it's causing stress.
Right.
So in the long term, it's actually, harming him mm-hmm. rather than taking the 3 minutes that it would take to go change that sticker. And I think a lot of us get into that and we probably need to kind of follow that path of like, mm-hmm. just get it done.
Yeah. And the other thing that came to me out of this too is that kind of, and this is probably so obvious to you, but healthy people make healthy decisions. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what, something that I got out of there. And so it brought home to me the whole, stage on which you are working, the world in which you are working, is to help people be healthier mm-hmm. so they can make healthier decisions. But it kind of happens all at the same time, in a way. I mean, that's what you're helping people do, I suppose.
Yeah, I think sometimes it comes down to a little bit of, I guess you could call it lack of scarcity. Once you start applying healthful thinking, mm-hmm. right, it's easier to continue that way,
mm-hmm.
right? When you
I don't know. I have to start doing that.
I don't believe that's true for you. But, I mean, I think most of it, and once we start paying attention to our finances, right, mm-hmm. and setting budgets and sort of making those decisions, we look at every problem that comes at us from a little different way because you've put some focus into your finances, right? Mm-hmm. You put some focus into your personal health, physical, mm-hmm. mental, emotional, mm-hmm. and then you can start looking at decisions from that way, problems from that way, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think, yeah, once you get the ball rolling, it's easier for it to keep rolling. Certainly, it's going to hopscotch off the trail plenty of times, and we uh-huh. have to pull it back. But yeah.
I'm interested also for me, I think the time issue is pretty interesting. The same thing, sometimes I can be like offended if somebody says, I don't have time for that, or I'll need something, or I'll want something, I'll ask for it, and I'm sorry I don't have time for that. And I'll think, my God, why couldn't they have time for that? You know, I mean, I give time for that. And then I realize they are focused on what they need to do to meet their goals. Mm-hmm. And if you're a person, and, you know, I'm a caregiver sort of by nature, mm-hmm. you know, I tend to other people's stuff. And in a way, that's something that we have to, all of us, ask ourselves, are we letting other people's needs get in the way of our being able to take care of ourselves?
Right.
Same story, isn't it?
It is. It is. A great exercise that we've done with the challenge in the past is had people write down their top five priorities in life
mm-hmm.
and then have a look at where you spend your time. And if you're spending your time outside of those top five priorities, then that aspect probably needs to be cut away, which is when somebody might reply to you, I don't have time for that.
Mm-hmm.
But really what they should be telling you is I don't feel the need to make time for that.
Oh, it would feel a little bit better. We need to find ways to mm-hmm. explain mm-hmm. to people that we are on our own life's path.
So I think if we bring this back to like resolutions mm-hmm, and goal setting, mm-hmm, I think mm-hmm. one thing to go into that is with this plan, that the idea is that what you have at your fingertips is enough. You just have to make the most of it.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Marnie Hartman. It's been a wonderful 25 minutes.
Thanks, Deborah, for having me.
You bet. Part of the program. Hey, who are you?
Hi there. My name is Marley Horner.
Hi, Marley.
And
where did you come from and what are you doing here?
Well, I moved to Haines about 23 years ago when I was born.
Were you born in Haines?
Alas, no. They had stopped delivering babies in Haines just a few years before I was. Okay. So I was in that generation of you can either go to Juneau or you can go to Whitehorse.
And Juneau was it?
And Juneau was it.
Okay,
so I was
great.
Born in Bartlett Hospital mm-hmm. to Lee and Greg Horner. So my mother is the school librarian here in
Oh, but
Haines.
This is about you. This is about you.
Okay. Oh, fine. Well, to understand who I am, okay. I got to know where I come from, right?
All right.
So right. And my dad is an artist here. So I don't know. Is that a Greg Horner pendant there? No.
It is not.
It's not.
No.
But
it could be. It looks very close. Right.
Close.
Right.
Anyways. I grew up here in Haines. Spent my entire life and here until I graduated high school and moved away. But here I was a part of a really great generation of kids. And so I have friends here that I've known since birth, really. You know, I have mm-hmm. pictures of me and Forrest Podsiecki, like actually being held as babies. And Forrest and I are still best friends. And so I got a lot of really great friends like that from Haines. So I really appreciate that growing up here. It's one of my favorite parts about being from Haines is that I have that kind of connection with kids that are, you know, my age that not a lot of other people would have that are still in contact with their friends from kindergarten.
One of the things that that always intrigued me was the you live very close to the Chilkat Center for the Performing Arts, where we are right now.
Yes.
And you have always been like a person attached to lighting and sound and all that.
Oh, more than that. I mean, I started coming up to the Chilkat Center just to listen to old comedy records. Burn Power had his The Word As Spoken. And I was like, oh, wow, that's there's all this music and stuff that is at the Chilkat Center, or at the radio station, really. So I started coming to KHNS and pulling old vinyl and listening to vinyl and just be that little kid that's sitting there at the in the listening station listening to old vinyl. And I started volunteering with Tim Shields on his Soundwave show and having a little comedy segment and playing Bill Cosby and Shelley Berman and Bob Newhart, and moved on from there and kind of started devouring the vinyl here at the KHNS. And as soon as I could get my own radio show, I started.
How old were you?
Well, I think, I don't know, they kind of fudged it. I think I was 15. I don't know. And then I kind of had to like have the dual show, and I came up here with a couple other people. And even before then, like, you know, Clifford Wickward would have his rock school show, and then moved on to David Bartolobos. So there was a generation of high schoolers that always had the rock show and the Friday night show, and I took over those for quite a while.
But the theater too, and that's what you're following that professionally,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, definitely. So the started probably the first show I was in. I was in sixth grade. I was in The Hobbit, the high school production of The Hobbit, and then from there I just like devoured everything else. So there was the community youth summer youth conservatory,
right?
So I started doing that, and the Sitka Fine Arts Camp, and going to Sitka every summer, and then coming back here and doing shows here, and eventually kind of moving away from the performing in Haines and doing a lot of the sound technician and light technician. And so I learned how to hang and focus lights here, and then had to relearn a lot of everything else. That when I went to a real school.
Not the school of hard knocks, but the school of...
But, you know, definitely having that real life experience of like actually getting up there and being around all the hot lights.
Right. Well, I know now you are vacationing, or you're visiting family and friends in the community, but where do you spend the rest of the year?
Well, I'm about to finish school up in Fairbanks, so with a theater degree. So right now I'm working in the scene shop, so I'm getting paid by the university to be a stage technician.
Uh-huh.
And at the same time, performance major, or emphasis performance. So we're doing shows. This spring is Tartuffe, so by Molière. It's a really a great old play.
Uh-huh.
Comment on religious hypocrisy and administration.
Cool. And this will be in Fairbanks.
Yeah, it'll be
there. Can you bring it on the road?
There are traveling shows in Fairbanks. The Fairbanks Shakespeare Company, and they do a summer Fairbanks show in Fairbanks that does travel.
Okay. So Marley, you know, today's show was about goal setting. So I'm just curious, would you share with us one of your goals?
Oh, yes, sure.
All right.
Well, part about working in the industry is really making connections. So the connections that I've made are really pushing me towards the West Coast. And like all my friends are in Seattle and Portland and San Francisco. So after Fairbanks, moving into repertory theater just along the West Coast. So traveling through Seattle and Portland and San Francisco, and hopefully avoiding L.A. But, you know, someone like Terry Weekend, who is really making her way through the professional world around there and moving around between Seattle and Portland, and possibly looking up to Alaska to find work, and Molly Wilson, who is finding incredible success in the theater or in the film industry. Mm-hmm. So having those kind of connections are really, really inspiring. So eventually, I mean, obviously, any stage actor's goal is to make it to Broadway. But I mean, that would be like the ultimate goal.
All right, we'll help you get there, Marley. Yeah, thank you very much.
Definitely.
Your 5 minutes is up.
Thank you, Haines.
Thank you, Marley. And that's it for Talk Around Town this week. Thanks to our guests, John Hagen, Dr. Marnie Hartman, and Marley Horner. Thanks to Margaret Friedenauer, the KHNS News Director, Production Engineer, and all-around support staff. Respect others' opinions. You're listening to Station KHNS 102.3 FM, Haines, Clackamas, and Skagway.